VorpalNetwork.com.
Hey, this is Mike Merles, lead developer of 4th Edition, and you're listening to The Tome.
This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by NobleKnightGames.com, where Out of Print is available again. And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store. Welcome to The Tome, episode 121. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we're braving dangerous locales and settling old scores. Really big old scores with Revenge of the Giants. And a little tidbit about today's review. I don't actually own the book. So I've brought in a couple of guests, and I'm just going to sit back and play host and ask questions and do introductions and all that kind of thing. So for the review portion of this, I've brought in two highly qualified men. First is a giant on the internet, Ken Newquist from Nuketown. Ken, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And our second guest, Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum, I smell the blood of Quinn Murphy from the At Will blog.
Hey. Great to be on.
Good to have you here again. So, today we're going to be talking about a D&D super adventure designed for PCs of 12th to 17th level. It was designed to pay homage to an old series of modules from 1st edition that was collected into a module called Against the Giants. And you can get Against the Giants for 1st edition and Revenge of the Giants for 4th edition from our sponsor in today's episode, NobleKnightGames.com. Noble Knight Games is a brick and mortar game store that also has a sizable online presence. They specialize in bringing you game products that may have been off the shelves for decades. But they also provide you new books and at a decent internet discount as well. Now you can get the original Against the Giants 1st edition module for as little as $6, as well as the 25th anniversary edition of the same module for $20, and of course the module that is today's topic, Revenge of the Giants, for $24. Check it out at NobleKnightGames.com.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. A huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.nobleknight.com. Or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
But for now, it's time to hear from Ken and Quinn about Revenge of the Giants. Gentlemen, give me a brief overview about this super adventure.
Well, you want to lead things off, Quinn?
Sure. Revenge of the Giants... Basically, it's a the players get hooked in with some sort of initial threat, and then they sort of get drawn into this what I've been sort of thinking of as a what I'd call a hollow legacy, this former sort of bit of history, this mighty legacy that's now sort of hollow inside and crumbled, and then it's up to the players to step inside it. And then sort of fill it with their actions and deeds from the inside out and sort of maybe grow it anew. And that's sort of what they're tasked to do. And as they do that, they, go through, find out information about the legacy and fight a lot of different giants through.
What do you mean by legacy? Like there's an old legend that turns out to not be so great and they need to recreate that legend or...
Hmm?
I'm just trying to understand. What do you mean by this hollow legacy?
Oh, there's this place, Argent, which is basically basically like a it's a city in the astral plane where it's like a paragon tier sort of grab bag where people would pledge their champions to this place and then they would fight big threats here and there, but because of politics and the passage of time, by the start of the story, a little bit before the start of the story, there's basically one guy, one wizard there sort of holding the torch, and there are no champions really there. And there is a new threat on the horizon, these titans leading giants to awaken a primordial there. So that's what I mean by sort of the Hollow Legacy. Like, it was mm-hmm. there. It was this great thing. But, you know, they create this sort of vacancy that the players have to fill.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description of it. I think also when I was reading through this book and when we actually started playing it with my group, one of the things that struck me was this is kind of almost like an implementation of the Dungeon Master Guide 2's themes. Right. So a lot of DMG 2 was oriented towards Paragon level play. And I think almost everything they talk about in that book ends up showing up in this module.
Yes.
From planar adventuring to... Well, I don't want to give away too much, but let's just say that you get to go amok in time a little bit, or at least there's an opportunity to do that. Basically, you know, just all these kind of really big heroic things that you would want to do at Paragon tier that they talk about get implemented in this book.
Okay, good. And DMG 2 dealt a lot with how to put more story into your game. So let's briefly say, or at least mention, how did they do at implementing a strong story in this and hooking players and getting them involved?
Ken, you want to lead on this one?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I admit my gaming group just got through the major prelude, right? So we've just sunk our teeth into the major adventure, and we're about to start finding out the real history of what's going on. I think, I mean, my sense of this, at least from a story perspective, and Quinn, I don't know if you've read it further in depth than I have, but my sense is that this is really – it's an homage to the old giant books. And while there's definitely a story in here, there's an awful lot of crunch.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very much, you know, you get to – when you start off this adventure, you have the obligatory meeting with the king or whatever and say, oh, you know, our city is under threat from these giants up in the hilllands. Can you go deal with them for us? And, you, of course, naturally, we say yes, and we head off to deal with the threat. And lo and behold, on the way out of town, we basically encounter this messenger from Argent, who is under assault by all of these elemental creatures and stuff. And the next thing you know, you're whisked away to this ancient city that's crumbling around it. But before you even have a chance to ask any questions, there's an attack. And, you know, you beat back that attack, and now there's another attack. So at least for us, I mean, we spent 8 hours in our basically prelude adventure to start this thing off. And we didn't get to ask a lot of questions because I think this was by design. They were really trying to build the tension. You know, Argent is about to fall. There are giants at the gates. We don't have time to ask questions. Go and fight them, you know? But I think that as you get deeper into it, there's definitely a story there, but it strikes me as being very much in the vein of Against the Giants, where you have these pieces that are connecting it, but really, ultimately, what you want to do is go and kill giants.
Yeah. I mean, I've gone through when I played through it, GMing it, we were about the same spot there, but I've read through fairly extensively, and it's interesting, more so than one of my big knocks on a lot of the WotC adventure to this point has been there's just a little too much fighting. It's a lot more sort of like, you know, run over here, kill things, run over there, kill things, and they greatly expand that in Revenge of the Giants, but I feel that some of the implementation is a touch off. Like in that prelude that Ken talks about, I think what would have been more effective was, okay, you get the initial threat, and then, woof, no, there's a bigger threat, and you're getting sent over here to the new place, this old crumbling city, rather than go through – I mean, it's literally like, I think two or three fights, big fights.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Three big fights.
before you really – talk to someone and sit down, and what they should have done, that it would have been easier, better to structure and easy to do it this way, is that you get whisked over and the wizard goes, okay, here's the deal. And then you talk with him, and then he's like, okay, great. Here's like what's going on. And, oh, by the way, we're getting attacked. Right. And then you fight, and do the theme. And I also thought the siege would have been handled better as a skill challenge. There are a lot of skill challenges through the initial parts of the book, and some really cool ones, ones I really, really like in concept. But then the skill challenges start dying out at the end of the book. So there's a good they do really like the first part really sort of shines, I feel, with implementation of sort of like fighting and role playing. And there are a couple ones near the end that I think are great sections. But overall, the sights are just too heavy crunch wise, I feel.
Well, and I think they tend to pull on the same trick. From what I've read further on, I'm doing a delicate balance here because I'm actually playing the game as opposed to GMing it this time, right? So I don't want to spoiler myself too much. But in looking through the book, that having been said, I also want to offer a good opinion, right? So in any case, going through the book, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of these times where you go out and you accomplish this great thing and you're back in the city and you're like, whew, you know, good thing we solved that. But wait, there's another attack on the city. I get where they're going with attention, but it just feels like it's just too unrelenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel too is like something where sort of GM fiat comes into play here, and you can always sort of, you know, they'll have parts with wandering monsters and what Ken referenced there with the sort of like, hey, we're back. Oh my God, we're under attack again. You can always sort of, you know, they put those there. And I think the sort of thought is, well, you can always just, as a GM, ignore that. But I think it would have been nice to, just so a GM doesn't feel compelled at there. I'm a pretty stubborn GM, so I'm not going to do anything that I don't want to do. But just in case, you know, is just to say, like, hey, here are some elements that you might want to use when the players go back. You know, these ones are mandatory. These ones are optional. You know, certain ones you have to move the plot along.
Right.
And I think that would have just been a nice reminder.
I think so. And I agree with what you were saying with regards to the siege and the skill challenges. I really like what they did with some of the skill challenges in here. There's a really nice investigation piece. Mm-hmm. We're trying to find out what's going on in a particular town, and it's an extended skill challenge. Nicely done.
Yeah, it's a great way of connecting. This is part of that sort of legacy thing that I was referring to, the Hollow Legacy. I just like combining those two words, I guess. basically the sort of conceit, without giving it away, is that you need to figure out what's going on, and there's a way for you to sort of delve back into the past, sort of without being a full time travel thing, but you get to view events of the past and then interact with them in basic ways. And those are the skill challenges. And then you get to learn some of the history as well as the sort of, if for that piece of history, the context of what's happening now. And I thought that was really sort of a clever device to move things forward and to give you the knowledge to act.
Yeah, I agree. I should say, to give it a little bit of context, my gaming group hasn't played 4E in, I think, about 9 months. So we were delving back into it because the review copy of Revenge of the Giant shows up on my door. I'm like, ah, yes. Well, this is an excellent opportunity for us to get together and start playing 4E again. And I think it was pretty cool. I mean, I talked with my one friend who volunteered to actually run the adventure because I think, as I was saying earlier, I've been doing nothing but DMing for you. I actually wanted to have a chance to get to the other side of the shield and play for once. And this was a really good opportunity because one of my players hadn't GM'd in probably like 10 years. He thought the book was pretty good, just in terms of giving him everything he needed to run the adventure. All the stat blocks are there. He wasn't, you know, spending a lot of time looking up things during the game. And he was able to kind of slip back into it fairly easily. From that perspective, he really, really liked the game. From our group's perspective, I think that early grind was starting to wear on us a little bit. But part of that was also just refamiliarizing ourselves with the 4E mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, one thing I can always say about the WotC D&D adventures is there's really no – you can't say that there's not enough info.
Right.
You know, and it's a good thing. But one of the real issues I have at certain parts in here is the sites are very – what I'd like to see are sites, you know, whether it's the Wizard's Tower or this thing where it's not just a collection of combats whether they're linked or not, in combats and hazards. But I'd like to see more extending of that skill challenge mentality, sort of like, you know, where, say, maybe their sightseeing formula is like X amount of fights, have X amount of fights, X amount of skill challenges or traps, hazards, something like that, just to mix them up a little bit more, because it can get so grindy, like Ken was referring to before. It's just, you know, okay, here's a fight, you know, stop, pause, breathe, fight. Stop, right. Pause, breathe, fight, slather, eat, you know, and then you get to go and get story bits for it. You know, okay, now we get, you know, the knowledge, and where they do a really great job is sort of stitching between the scenes, this great sort of I sort of think of it as sort of like a knowledge driven sort of adventure. Like, okay, you're going to go through this, and once you do that, you're going to get this item or this piece of information, and then you can act on it there. And then you're sort of, you know, again, it's sort of that linking of the past and present there, and you're constantly getting bits from the past in the current context, and you can sort of drive forward from there. But getting it is a little too monotonous.
Right. I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but there's not really a big major settlement for you to go back to for purchasing of magic items and doing that kind of random role playing, right? Because, I mean, the Argen is pretty much abandoned.
Yep.
And I don't know – I mean, at some point you're able to bring back some of the defenders of Argen to assist with that. But really, I mean, it's very much oriented towards, you know, this unrelenting fight. And, you know, you talk about, like, our initial run with this. You know, it wasn't a question of taking an extended rest. We didn't have time to take an extended rest. So I don't know. I think I would have liked to have a little bit more of that in there.
Mm-hmm. So the module definitely – challenges the concept of the 5-minute workday,
but maybe, at least from what I've seen.
But maybe goes too far. I mean, does it give you time to breathe and rest and recover and do the things that that adventurers normally need to do between big fights?
I think those opportunities for rest are really just the opportunities for research.
Okay.
I mean, that's my sense from going through it. I mean, it's not like, for example, in I was comparing this to the 3E book I have, the Expedition to the Ruins of Greyhawk, which, you know, the first 20 pages of that are basically detailing locations in Greyhawk that you might want to do something with. And they specifically build in sections in that adventure to say, okay, here you should pause and let your characters go do the things they would like to do in Greyhawk, you know, find that magic item, talk to that NPC, you know. Whatever. And I didn't get a sense that there were going to be a lot of those opportunities. But having said that, though, at least the way my group is intending to run this, this isn't like our weekly game. This is going to be basically every 2 months or so we get together and we spend a Saturday playing D&D 4E and just like really beating up on monsters and killing giants. So I don't know that we were necessarily going into it looking for that that depth of play. We're really there to just go and kill monsters.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I would have liked, if I can sort of put on my junior amateur game designer hat on for a second, what I would have liked in Argent is, you know, and you could easily do this in your own adventure if you're running it. They do this great thing where you can sort of connect back with the spirit. I mean, what I'd want is sort of, since they have this thing where you can go back and sort of interact with the spirits and find this information to go through and do other adventures, what I would love to have seen are that, like, maybe as a byproduct of going through this process to interact with them, all of a sudden you're able to see some of those spirits actually in the city, so it gets filled with the spirits of defenders past. And then you could sort of interact with these people. I mean, they're, you know, spirits. They're not – you're not going to really give you anything or stuff like that. But it all of a sudden creates life of a kind of cool type. And then you could sort of interact. And because it's this great scene, great town. They have it mapped out. It's a great little map of it. But there's not much to do there.
Right. I had the same reaction. I was looking at the map going, oh, this is pretty cool. And you even read some of the locations. You know, there's a couple of inns and stuff. And there's, you know. seem like, oh man, I wish there were people there. It's cool that there was this history, but it would be nice that if I could actually, you know, have my characters go and relax at the inn for a while, you know.
Well, and how are they supposed to learn about that history if there's nobody to tell them the story?
Right. So, and I think there—I mean, I think there are opportunities, like with any adventure, to kind of go in as the GM and fill in some of these spots. I mean, I could easily see, just as you kind of go out on this one major quest to try and find the defenders of Argent to bring them back. I could easily see, you know, as a GM, throwing in some opportunities to go around to some of the new nations or some of the old nations of the current world and say, we need help. And petition those, you know, kings to provide people so that the town kind of fills up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I will say, like, when we played Return to Ravenloft, we kind of ran into the same problem with our PCs, where we didn't really have a good base of operations to go back to. You know, there was just this one little town that didn't have anything that you could actually do because you're constantly under attack by the undead. And I think this, you know, this has some of the same problem, except that you're constantly under attack by giants.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like an experienced DM could maybe take this and modify it to create both more role-playing opportunities, more story opportunities, mm-hmm. and provide some of the needed rests that fourth edition sort of demands anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think Revenge of the Giants is actually a very good module, for an experienced GM. I mean, it is a very good platform, for a lot of different things. I just feel that, like, if you try and run it as written, there are just going to be so many spots where, you know, not only the characters, but the players are just going to get a little exhausted.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think part of that may be that they were trying to emulate that old tournament module feel from the original Against the Giants, right? Because those were tournament modules back in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to a con, you run through it, you kill a bunch of giants. The problem is when you make it your campaign, it can be just a little too much. And I think, I mean, if you go back and look at the original Against the Giants, there's not a heck of a lot of story there, you know, because they were individual tournament modules that just kind of got mashed together and it became part of this huge epic, but only kind of after the fact.
You're right.
Okay. So it sounds like this is a good module if you're an experienced DM and you don't want to have to necessarily do all the mechanic work of putting together a great set of encounters. But if you just want something that you can pull out and this is your campaign for the next five levels or whatever, it may suffer in that regard.
I think it depends on the GM. I think if you're the kind of GM who, and it also depends on the players you have. If you're the kind of group that really just loves to get together on a Friday night and, you know, you're almost taking a beer and pretzels approach to it where you just want to go and kill monsters, this game is going to work just fine for you, probably even as written, you know. But if you're trying to get a little more meaty, you might feel like you need to add some stuff in. But at that point, I think if you are that group, then you probably have a GM who's going to be able to fill in those holes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what's let's do some favorites then. Let's each name, and by each I mean the two of you, name one thing, give one example of something you really liked, and then we'll do one thing where you think they could have really improved. Who wants to give me their favorite, their big like first?
I got one.
Okay, give it to me.
It's a pretty big one. The whole Frost Giants section. I loved how that one was set up, because it's more it takes a break from a lot of the sort of go to a site, kill a bunch of things, and makes it more about exploration. Okay, we've got to go over here. You got this general sort of map of this Frost Island. Great elements in there. I feel it's the best part of the adventure.
I think I'm going to go with just kind of an all-inclusive one, which is the skill challenges. I really enjoyed the skill challenges. Just reading through them, I can't wait to play them. But you know, I thought that they did a good job of kind of incorporating some of the advice from that we saw in DMG2. I think they're good examples of, if nothing else, stuff that you might want to take and use in your own game. You know, giving you some inspiration on how to use skill challenges. So I would say that would be my favorite part.
Very good. And then, Ken, Quinn started last time, so why don't you give us one thing that you think they could have, one area of improvement that you think would have made a big difference?
I think, I mean, for me, it was actually the setup. Because what I really expected, and I think what all the guys in my group expected, was that we were going to sit down and that we really were going to go kill giants right away. The name of the module is called Revenge of the Giants, not Revenge of the Elemental Things You've Never Seen Before. And as you head out into the countryside, the first big fight you have with is with these elemental things. We were three encounters in before we actually fought our first giant, and that was actually a hill giant shaman with a bunch of these other elemental creatures. So I think I would have almost preferred to have had a nice encounter with the hill giants as the a setup. You know, you get into the lair and you realize something is wrong, and then you go to Argent. You know, give you an opportunity to kind of do some of the old school dungeon crawling type thing. Figure out that there's a lot more here than you saw, and then go to Argent, as opposed to, you know, getting caught up in these elemental things. Which, you know, to their defense, those do come into play later on, because there is this whole primordial and elemental storyline that's going on. But for me, I just wanted to kill giants.
Mm-hmm. So you would have improved that initial hook.
I think I would have improved the initial hook. I mean, just because that's what I was expecting as a player going in, was that my first encounter, let's go take out some giants.
Okay, good. Quinn, give me your one area of improvement.
Mine, it's similar there in that intro. We already sort of talked about that initial grind of the area. I would have just liked to have gotten that structured a bit better. So to sort of get players involved on their sort of mission and what's going on a little sooner, rather than, you know, I know they're sort of trying to, after the hook, get it sort of a little almost in media res, like, okay, now everything's starting, but it was just too much before getting that initial dose of story.
All right, great. So let's see if I can summarize what I've heard today. Sounds like the module has some really good encounters, some good mechanics, and some really good skill challenges, but suffers a little bit in the story and sort of the flow and the pacing of the whole thing, but that a good experienced DM could take this and tweak it and modify it even on the fly and turn this into a successful chunk of a campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Summarize what I've heard today pretty well?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
Okay. Yeah, and I think it's a good, you know, because this is a new format for them, this sort of book format there in this sort of mega adventure for fourth ed it is. I think it's a good first step, and I can't wait to sort of see what the next revision is going to be like.
And I think the other thing that should be mentioned is that because this is a Paragon adventure, if my group was starting off at 12th level with new characters, but if you had a heroic campaign or you were starting off a Paragon at 10th level, you could have sowed the seeds of this adventure going into it. And I think that might have given you more context. You know, if the Legend of Argent is something that you may have heard about before, or not even the name, but just like echoes of this once great city, you know, and where have all the heroes gone, and that kind of thing. I think you could really kind of seed that into a low-level campaign, maybe even give players a taste of the Hill Giants, like I was talking about, and then boom, you're into this and suddenly have a lot more context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great platform, I think, for like for a good campaign.
All right, great. So I'm going to give you a chance for any last thoughts before I move along. So if you've got any other things you want to say about Revenge of the Giants, I think we're at maybe about a half hour here, which is probably good for an adventure module. So any last thoughts before we close things out?
I just, as a personal note, I was just really excited to be able to play for once. Mm-hmm. And that this book, I mean, that's the thing I think I'm most thankful for, is that I just had the opportunity to actually go and play because this book came out, and it's a nice meaty mega adventure, you know? So I could hand this off to one of my other players. He could step up, run it as the DM, and I actually got to play my Avenger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, you know, we definitely have some sort of criticisms here, but I would, if you were to sort of ask me after I've already read through it, would I pick it up again? Yes. I think it's there's a lot of stuff that it does really, really right, and it's worth a read, especially as a GM, just to sort of get some of those things they do right.
Okay, great. So the ultimate test then of whether this something is a good module, both of you have run or played at least part of it. Did you have fun?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. That's a pretty good endorsement then. All right, then. This has been episode 121 Before we go, I want to say thank you to our guests. Ken, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at nuketown.com.
Where you talk all kinds of geeky sort of things, don't you?
Yes, I do. I've got a somewhat occasional podcast called Nuketown Radioactive, and I've blog on a whole bunch of different gaming and geek parenting related notes.
And as a geek parent, I appreciate it. And then Quinn, where can people go to hear more about your big ideas?
4eatwill.net.
That's where you will get the 4e at will blog.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
And everybody can email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com. Follow me or the Vorpal Network on Twitter. Join the Tome Show group on Facebook. And you can always leave a comment on the blog. It's not hard to get a hold of me. Don't forget to let people know about the show. That helps us grow and keeps things going. And, of course, please check out our sponsor for the episode, NobleKnightGames.com, and thank them for supporting the Tome Show. And you can also find products mentioned on the show and more at the Tome's Amazon store, which also helps support the podcast. Links for the things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. Now we've braved dangerous terrain, fought foes, and met legendary characters, and all of which seem to be a bit larger than ourselves. And I'd like to think that along the way, maybe we've learned something, even if a little something, you know, compared to giants. In this, episode 121, Revenge of the Giants of...
I'm on the wall.